nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
Okay, so this is lecture 9, and today we'll be talking about negative bias temperature instability and the time dependence of how defects form and during the stress phase. Why stress phase? Because there will be, as you might remember, based on the summary in lecture 8, that in order to make a projection, we have to think how, from a few hours of experiment, we can project to 10 years lifetime. So this is the lecture today. And you also remember that if you have a stress, then you turn off your computer, go to bed. The next day, the computer heals itself a little bit. That relaxation process, I'll discuss in the next class. And in the subsequent classes, we'll talk about voltage dependence, that if you do three high voltages, V1, V2, V3, how do you project it to the operating condition, as well as temperature dependence in the subsequent lectures. So today, we are going to talk about that NBTI time-dependent phase of it, and we'll see how the features play out. So my outline again has 4 or 5 pieces. I'll talk a little bit about time-dependent degradation, that how things evolve as a function of time. And then we'll try to interpret this degradation using something called a reaction diffusion model. Now, both the words you know the word reaction, that when two species come together, they produce something else, so the word that you know. You also know the word diffusion, that if you inject a particle somewhere, it gradually goes away from that point by random hopping. What you might not have known before this lecture is that when you put these two things together, it does very strange thing. It is one of the deepest results in physics of pattern formation. And I'll have a little appendix to show the generality of this reaction diffusion model. But today, I'll just explain it, the NBTI degradation using this model. Now, of course, you can solve it numerically. And in the homework, you'll be doing so. There are simulation softwares in NanoHub that will allow us to do so. But an approximate analytical solution provides deep insight. And if you sort of know how to solve this, you can sort of use this technique of solution in wide variety of problems. So we'll discuss that. The remarkable thing, however, is that NBTI, as I have said, is an important degradation mechanism. Things degrade as a function of time. The important point is that this is really a degradation in threshold voltage. But at the end, as a circuit designer, one may not care about threshold voltage per se. What one cares about is the drain current of a transistor. Let's say for a logic circuit, you care about drain current. And what I want to show that even if you had a degraded transistor, it is possible that the transistor will be degradation free. How can that be? And that is a surprise. And in fact, it turns out most modern transistors, very recent transistors, uses some variant of the technique to make the circuit function even in the presence of NBTI degraded transistor, right? So a set of features, and then I'll conclude. Now let's think about what the NBTI, where it arises, because this is a degradation mechanism. Why should you care? Consider on the left-hand side a typical circuit, a small section of a circuit. About the inverter, for example, the 6, 3, 5, these are inverters. You can have AND gates, you can have NOR gates, all those things, like AND gate is 4 and 2, and then you can have a set of input on the left and a set of output 1 and 2 on the right. And the question we are asking is that for a transistor in a circuit like this, what is the typical stress it sees? So let's take that one of these inverters, and of course you can, even in the AND gate, you can easily think about very similar similar configurations. So let's think about an inverter. In the inverter, what I have is a PMOS connected in series with an NMOS on the bottom. And if you remember how an inverter works, that when the input is zero, an inverter inverts it, makes it one. And what one really means, that if your top line is VDD, then the output voltage will also be VDD. When you are not transitioning from one point to another, let's say you are sitting with input zero for a while, and then of course the output will be VDD. Now, if you think about this transistor, the PMOS specifically, why I am talking about PMOS? Because in the last class I mentioned that there is something to do with holes, inversion, so therefore I am talking about PMOS. If your NMOS transistor somehow gets into accumulation, you have to worry about that also. There are analog circuits where it will go to an accumulation, but here we'll focus on PMOS. Now, let's think about the PMOS. The PMOS, the source and drain, has VDD and the input is zero. Therefore, if I take a MOSFET, which is shown on the bottom right, then I can equivalently represent the situation by grounding the source and drain and putting a negative voltage on the gate. Because as far as the transistor is concerned, only thing it knows about is the relative voltages. It doesn't know about absolute positive or absolute zero. That is where the word NBTI comes from, because if you look at the original inverter, there is no negative voltage anywhere. It's zero or VDD, zero swinging between this. But as far as the equivalent situation is concerned, a transistor source and drain grounded and a gate in the negative voltage has the equivalent situation. So therefore, that's where the word NBTI comes from, negative bias temperature instability. And what we wish to discuss is not only the original threshold voltage fluctuation, that has to do with pre-existing defects. You remember E prime centers, PB centers. So that is VT0. We are not going to talk about that immediately now. But what we want to talk about is, as you are using the transistor for a prolonged period of time, how will your threshold voltage evolve? That is the delta VT. And I have put a comma in BTI, because there will be shift due to hot carrier degradation, there will be shift due to radiation, to gate dielectric breakdown. And so therefore, to isolate the part due to NBTI alone, I have put that comma, then NBTI in there. It depends on time, of course. Longer you stress, more defective it is. Higher your stress voltage, more defective it could be. We will focus on time, stress, two lectures down. So I have already discussed the essential features of this in the last summary review, that we have talked about that ID is, as a function of time, is given by, of course, the mobility and VG minus VT. Now you might be saying that, oh, in my 606 or semiconductor device class, I put like VG minus VT squared, or I had an alpha. That's no problem. I'm just putting a simple version for the where in the linear response. So if you have a square and other things, doesn't matter in this particular case. What I want to emphasize, that if your VD goes up, which is VT goes up, threshold voltage goes up, then in principle, if nothing funny happened to mobility, and we'll see that something funny may happen to the mobility towards the end, but if nothing happened to mobility, if mobility didn't change, then the drain current should reduce. Because VT is going up, you need more voltage to get the same current. And this is something we have discussed in the last class, that if you plot experimentally, if you go to the lab and experimentally take three voltages, take three transistors, apply 2.2 volts, 2.5 and 2.8 volts, and then keep measuring the shift in the threshold voltage. How will you measure the threshold voltage? We'll look at the change in the drain current, use the top formula, and from the change in the drain current, you will extract back what the corresponding delta VT is. And I plotted it in a log-log plot, because if I plot it in a linear plot, in many of these features you cannot see at all because, you know, the axis will be compressed. The important thing here I mentioned that degradation occurs very early, very fast. So you can see within about 10 seconds or so, there have been a significant enhancement of degradation. And then gradually, it has a power law. Power law meaning in a log-log plot, delta Vt is given by t to the power n. And this value of n is experimentally known to be close to 0.16. There are activation energies and other things, the prefactor. Today, we'll not worry about this A or activation energy. We'll worry about that a little bit later. My goal today is to think about N. Why such a strange solution? There's no differential equation you know so far. I mean, normal students would know so far. That would give rise to a T to the power N dependence, right? Over 10 orders of magnitude. There's nothing like this. You know, you can say that I have heard about 1 over F noise. I did discuss that. That has a power dependence also. But you may also remember that's over a very tiny region, relatively tiny region, and then other processes. Because this has a minimum time constant and a maximum time constant. Only over that narrow region I had 1 over F. But this goes about 7, 8, 10 orders of magnitude and has been shown to be valid experimentally. The other piece I want to explain, that this time exponent, although it's 0.16 or very close to that, for this plasma nitride oxide, you can see where the nitrogen content is very small towards the silicon substrate. On the top, on the left, you can see the blue, that you have fewer defects. Silicon nitride is defective, you remember, right? So you have fewer defects in the PNO, or plasma nitride oxide. In that case, the exponent is close to 1 over 6. However, if you take a thick thermal nitride oxide, the TNO, shown on the top right by the red curve, you have more nitrogen close to the interface. In that case, you will see that the exponent is a little bit lower. Now, you remember that you may worry, say that 0.12, 0.16, what does it matter? It's almost the same, but it's not the same. Because you see, when you are projecting something over, this is just a 3 hours, 1,000 second on the x-axis is 3 hours. You are going to project this to 10 years. And so, therefore, a small change in the slope may make a difference between whether you'll be able to sell this IC or this is sort of sitting as in your company as a junk silicon. Nobody is going to buy it. And so although the exponent is very small, the physics has to be understood in exquisite detail. Otherwise, you'll be in big trouble. And this is the similar thing that you can see as a function of nitrogen content, people show that the exponent can indeed change. So this is something, the general information, and towards the end of this, by the end of this lecture, you should be able to explain all these features clearly and distinctly. So let me explain how a reaction diffusion model might be able to interpret this result. Now, what is a reaction diffusion model? I told you about this PB centers. What is a PB center? Generally, you have on the silicon-silicon dioxide interface, there are many places where the bond is alone. The fourth bond is alone. It has three. Remember, it has to have a tetrahedra. Three of the heads are taken care of by silicon, but the fourth one is not, and that's a dangling bond. That's a PB center, and we often put hydrogen in to tie the bond up so that it has that same covalent bond. And you know how it relaxes the structure and how it reduces the defect. However, let's assume what would happen if the hydrogen went away. Now, why am I thinking about NBTI and hydrogen? Remember, in the last class, I showed you by deuterium experiment, by ESR experiments, that there must be hydrogen involved in this depassivation process. So, remember that there are holes in the system. The red circle is a hole. This is, we are talking about PMOS in inversion. Lots of holes around. And if the hole is captured by the silicon hydrogen bond, it is equivalent to removing one of the electrons. Now, previously you had two electrons holding this covalent bond, but now you have one electron holding the covalent bond. Naturally, its barrier has been weakened, the bond has been weakened. And as a result, that hydrogen may diffuse away under temperature, under electric field, may diffuse away, leaving behind a single isolated defect, unpassivated. So it has returned to the PV center. You made it good in the beginning of the process by hydrogenating it. Now the hydrogen has gone away, so you are back to the defective surface. So this is the reaction part. And in the reaction part, what happens that this is a schematic of the barrier. Barrier, why? Because it requires certain energy to dissociate silicon hydrogen. It will not go away on its own. And this barrier is a equivalent process, picture, cartoon picture of how much energy you might need to break a silicon hydrogen bond. Typically, on the order of 2 electron volts. Now, once you capture a hole, you have, instead of 2 electrons sharing a covalent bond, you have 1 electron doing so. And therefore, your energy required to break the hydrogen is a little lowered, and therefore the barrier is lowered. So now the bond can break easy. And so the effective barrier, moreover, you have applied an electric field, and that will also reduce the barrier a little bit. We'll discuss that in a little bit later. For the time being, when we discuss the field dependence of this process. For the time being, let's just assume that the barrier has been lowered and therefore bond breaking is easier. So the effective reaction is then a silicon hydrogen bond reacting with a hole is creating a dangling bond, which is silicon hydrogen plus, and then when the hydrogen goes away, then Si plus, a positive charge, sort of stays back. Now, why did it become positive? Because when hydrogen left, it took its proton, but it also took its electron away, right? And so therefore, because the total charge after the hole capture was positive, and so when the hydrogen left, it left as a neutral particle, if it did near, sir. And so therefore, you have Si plus left. As a result, you will have interface charge that will change your threshold voltage. You see, if the hydrogen left without taking the electron with it as a proton, if it left as a proton, Si would have been neutral. If it is neutral, then it wouldn't have showed up in the threshold voltage shift. So therefore, this is an important feature of the threshold voltage shift. 4 processes then. First, you have this original silicon hydrogen bond. Next, this silicon hydrogen bond will be dissociated. So you can see the hydrogen is sort of floating up a little bit away from the silicon, which is the second silicon. Now, the third silicon, which is shown here, this is just a cartoon, can essentially diffuse away completely from where it started, or it can come back and repassivate the surface. You know, the hydrogen doesn't know. It, when it has an option, it can go away, diffuse away from the original point. It is randomly doing so. But if it is a close by hydrogen, then it could go and repassivate. Nobody is preventing this back reaction. So what we have to do, now you see there is a reaction going on at the interface and a diffusion going on in the bulk. That is where the word reaction diffusion comes from. So, The reaction and the diffusion part, you may remember very quickly from the previous lectures, that once the hydrogen goes away, then this is 100 surface, right? Do you remember? And in the 100 surface, this corresponding electron, the corresponding broken bond is given by the white balloon, you can see, connected to the black silicon on the interface. Do you remember which direction? Generally, in 100 surface, either it looks to 111 and 211. Generally, so I have shown you a 111 process. So if you are able to see this microscopically, you go there and look at the surface, you will see many 111 or 211 dangling bonds sitting around once the hydrogen has floated away. You also remember that the silicon dioxide looks complicated. It has the tetrahedral structure, but it is amorphous with various rings. And then what will happen, that there'll be the diffusion process associated with it. Now let's just focus on the reaction first. First reaction. What I have written on the bottom is the equation for interface reaction. I am saying dNit dt, it means number of interfacial defects per unit time, the rate at which it is being generated. Well, how does it depend? The first term on the right is proportional to Kf. Kf is a forward dissociation rate. It depends on how many holes you have and what is the electric field and these type of things. So we'll not worry about that for the time being. N0 is the number of bonds which are, in the beginning, silicon hydrogen bonds which are completely passivated. Everybody is happy. So N0 is the number of silicon hydrogen bond in the beginning. N0 minus NIT means number of bonds that are not yet broken. So of course, number of new traps generated will be proportional to the number that is not yet broken. If it's broken, then you cannot count it. It's already broken. Now, there is no problem with this. If you look at the first term on the right, you know how to solve this. This is like a RC circuit or the first order differential circuit. No problem. This is not a problem. The real interesting thing is the second term. The second term says that KR is a reverse reaction. And reverse reaction depends on how many broken bonds you have, NIT, and how many hydrogen are sort of loitering around close to the interface. And therefore, NH0, because it has to be close. If it has diffused 10 nanometer away, then it cannot remotely react it. It has to first come to the interface, then react it. So therefore, I cannot count all hydrogen that has gone away. Only the hydrogen which are close to the interface, that can react. Now, this reverse reaction is very important, which makes the equation non-linear. And this non-linearity is fundamental in creating that power law. So we'll see that. Now, what about diffusion? Diffusion, hydrogen is diffusing. Is there something interesting in there? Now, again, there's something very interesting in here. So let me explain that. So I'm trying to explain that when the hydrogen goes away, the blue arrow, the hydrogen is going away. How does it go away? Now, it doesn't go away like a free electron. Free electron in a conduction band, essentially it's free. It can jump around. A hydrogen doesn't go away like this. It's a little bit more complicated because it is going through a network which is disordered. So let's think about how a hydrogen might go. What I have shown in the middle side is a set of silicon dioxide bonds. And you will see that on the far left, I have the original silicon and a hydrogen. So that is the original center, passivated PB center. Then hydrogen starts its journey, and that is shown in the dashed line with the arrow. Now, as it is going through from one point to another, now it will go through various steps as it is going through the neighborhood of various atoms. And then it may be an interstitial site. A bunch of time, it is a, what is it, interstitial, the other one is? So when it has a vacancy, then it will go and sit in the vacancy, which is the final state. But in between, it is going through the interstitial states, shown here in the dashed line. And if you were to look at the energy band diagram, you will see the silicon hydrogen on the right. From the silicon hydrogen bond, original bond, it jumps up. That is the original barrier height I told you about a few minutes ago. And then you can see the arrow moving up. And as it is going through the neighborhood, then it is sort of, it can temporarily bond as a weak bond, get dissociated, and then locally stop in a neighborhood, because these are random structures, not crystalline. In the crystalline, every situation is equivalent. Here, of course, depending on which neighborhood you are sort of cycling around, your barriers will be different. And so therefore, this diffusion process is generally written as dNx dt. Nx means it's a hydrogen. If it's a hydrogen, then we'll have x is h. If it is hydrogen atom, H2 atom, then X will be H2, so on and so forth. And you'll just write a diffusion equation. Now, for simplicity, I have written a one-dimensional diffusion equation, because the hydrogen is coming vertically from the bottom towards the top. Therefore, one dimension is fine. But if it is tiny transistor, then it could go in three dimension. So then you write it a little bit more generally. Now, the diffusion coefficient, you all know how to do the diffusion coefficient. There is omega naught is the attempt frequency. So it's trapped somewhere in the weak bond. It tries many times to get out. And so omega naught tells you how frequently it is trying. AD tells you how often it is getting trapped, how far apart it is getting trapped. This part, exactly like an electron moving in a solid, except there is this EH over KT. Because once it gets trapped, it requires a certain amount of energy to go up. And so therefore, diffusion coefficient of this material, actually, if you raise the temperature, it diffuses faster, right? Generally, in silicon or for an electron, if you raise the temperature, diffusion coefficient goes down, right? Because it scatters more. But here, in contrast, a hydrogen will diffuse faster if you were to do this. Now, of course, the real landscape is very complex. I'll tell you a little bit more about that. But for the cartoon system, I'm going to assume all EHs are the same, just to make my life easy. The basic physics will remain the same. And so therefore, I have made my energy landscape all having the same depth on the bottom right, same height, so that it is, say, EH that is can hopping around. The first one containing the blue balls are the total height for the silicon hydrogen dissociation. Okay. So I have some to summarize. I have two equations now. One equation for the interface. By the way, you may notice I have rotated my transistor 90 degrees. Now silicon substrate is on the left. Hydrogen is going through the oxide. And polysilicon is on the right. And you can see the hydrogen is going away. And then some of the bottom one, silicon hydrogen, the bond is still unbroken. I've explained this equation to you, the reaction equation, and emphasize in particular the importance of the nonlinear term on the right-hand side. And then you can also have this equation for diffusion I explained, which is the second equation. I explained to you this importance of dH, the diffusion coefficient, and how it's different from electrons. But also, you could, if this thing is charged, if it were charged, I said it's neutral. But if it were charged, then in addition to diffusion, you'll put a little drift term over there, which is nx mu x e. And d over mu will still be kT over Q. That is the strange thing. So Einstein relationship still holds even for hydrogen. Now, how do you connect these two equations up? Well, you put a boundary condition that exactly at the interface, the number of hydrogen produced, part of it will diffuse away and part of it will repassivate the bond. So therefore, if you put it in, this is, you need an interfacial condition. Diffusing on the right, reaction on the interface, and connecting these two things up allows you to solve these three equations. You can solve it. Put it in a computer. all of you are very good. You can put it in very quickly. In a few minutes, you can solve it. It's already there in a NanoHub tool. And all the results that you have seen before in the last class, power law, exponent, and other things will come out of that numerical simulation. But of course, what I want is I want to explain how it actually works in a simple way. So let's see whether I can do that. So let me start by seeing whether I can explain things at a very early stage when the diffusion is still not important, or very late stage when all the bonds are broken. Can I do that? And if I can do that in the very early stage, you see the blue balls are still just exchanging between the silicon hydrogen and the first node in the silicon dioxide, but you don't see any blue balls or broken the hydrogen. Hydrogen is the blue ball here. And though you don't see it in the subsequent wells, so that means diffusion is still not important. So let's see whether we can do that. Because diffusion is not important, I'm in good shape. I will get rid of the second equation. Now, if I solve the first equation, if the whole solution we'll see of this coupled reaction diffusion equation will have four regions. One region will be t to the power 1. It will increase linearly. For a little bit of time, it will be t to the power 0. It will be flat. Nothing will generate new. And then, all of a sudden, this t to the power 1/6 will arise. And then when everything is broken, it will be flat. These two equations knows about all these features. So let's see how it knows about it. Let's start at a very early time, very early, and I'm talking about meaning less than a microsecond. In that case, I have very few NIT. I have almost nothing is broken. So I drop the NIT in the reaction equation. Because I don't have any NIT, and I have very little hydrogen in the close by. And so therefore, the reverse reaction is also not important. So if I do that, My life will be very simple. DNIT DT is forward reaction multiplied by the number of unbroken bonds. You solve it. NIT is linearly proportional to time. Right? Because it's a differential equation with a constant on the right-hand side. When you integrate this, it will go linearly. You have seen this before, right? Remember in the experimental curve, the initial rise was very fast. And this was a reflection of very fast reaction. All right. Now, a little bit later, still the diffusion is not important. How do you solve this equation? Well, what you do here, you say dNIT dt. Yes, there is something, there is a rate of dissociation, but I'm going to think this is approximately equal to zero because there will be some forward reaction, but it will exactly be passivated by reverse reaction. What does it mean? It means that hydrogen just left. It hasn't still started diffusing away. And most of them, through detailed balance, is passivating and depassivating the surface. So you solve that equation, little equation. If you solve it, you will see that NIT is given by a constant. If it's a constant, I can write t to the power 0. What is t to the power 0? It's 1. So that means a constant, you could write it if you wanted to as t to the power 0. So in the early phase, when this detailed balance, dissociation and reverse reaction has balanced each other, there will be no further reaction. What about in the very end? Well, in the very end, everything is broken. And so therefore, of course, you don't expect anything to happen there. N0 will be equal to NIT. And therefore, there will be no further reaction. Right. So these three pieces are easy. Let's think about the real fun is the power law part of it. Let's see how it comes about. Now, in order to do that, I have to tell you something which you already know, that if you put a drop of ink in water, then, you know, it diffuses, right? How does it diffuse? Well, if you put a delta function drop, which is my red arrow, A little bit later, it will be this green Gaussian diffusion. A little bit later and a little bit later, gradually it will spread out. And do you know how it spreads out as a function of time? It spreads out as the diffusion coefficient multiplied by t, but square root of that. Because it is not going, if it were drift, then it would go in one direction. This is a random walk. Sometimes it goes forward, sometimes it comes back, goes forward and comes back. And so therefore, it cannot make as far, it cannot go as far as it could with pure drift. So let's see whether I can use that information to do some calculations, which is very simple. One thing for this calculation is very useful is to realize this following fact. I don't like solving differential equation. This is a second order differential equation. But the information, there's the equivalent information in the second line of NIT, which says no matter where the hydrogen is, because every hydrogen is coming from a broken bond, so the number of broken bonds must be equal to the number of hydrogen in the system, because they came from together. It is like if you have a set of homes in India, let's say, the children have left and come to America, no matter which state they are in, if you wanted to know number of empty homes, which is NIT in India, must be equal to the integral of all the students in various states integrated over all space. That's the conservation of students or conservation of hydrogen, which is the same thing. This equation, you see, will be much easier to solve. It's called an integral equation, because if it is neutral hydrogen, then it will be diffusing. And if it's diffusing, then I know how far it diffuses. It goes from zero to a square root of dt. That's how far it can diffuse. And all I have to do is to count the number of hydrogen within the diffusion region. Then I'll be able to calculate how many defects I have, right? On the other hand, if it is drift, now I know if it's drift, then it goes from zero to mu multiplied by the electric field multiplied by t. I'll count how many hydrogen I have, charged hydrogen, proton here. Then I'll be done. And in between, well, it will be sum of these between. You know. And so you can see for the diffusion, it looks like a triangle. For drift, it looks like a square, elongated square, rectangle, because they are moving at a constant speed. Over there, they are moving at a diffusion. The diffusion. You wanted to ask something? Yeah, go ahead.
First question, like the drift versus diffusion, which controls this thing? Like which mechanism is controlling?
So that's a very good question. So he is saying, which one will, how would I know it's diffusion or drift? And I will explain that N will tell you. And depending on, these will have very different power exponent. If one versus the other is true, then you can go in the experiment and check it out. The other piece I'm going to make, assumptions I'm going to make, the dNIT dt is small compared to the forward and reverse dissociation rates. So there is two big fluxes going on, forward flux and reverse flux, but the net increase is relatively small, so I'm going to drop that term. And so therefore, if the NIT is also small, I'm assuming this, then you have KF N naught, and you have the KR on the other side, you divide it up. And so what you will see that NH and NIT, the product of this, is always going to be a constant in this equation. Now, people often ask, how do you know when to drop what? Well, one, the answer is that once you have solved a lot of problems in your life, after a while, you begin to see patterns. In my life, I've solved many equations in many different problems. And therefore, you see it. I have seen it in when I did the Einstein relationship in 606. You have two big fluxes. You assume them to be approximately equal to zero. And thereby, you get the Diffie-Einstein relationship between diffusion and mobility. So you try different things, and after a while, if you are lucky and if you are good, then if you know a lot of things, you'll be able to take an unconventional idea from a different field and be able to apply it to solve a new problem. So I'm going to solve these two little equations and show you how the power exponents come about. So let's start with the diffusion. Now you can see the blue balls, which are the hydrogen, are now in other wells. That means diffusion has started. And these pictures, the derivation is how I do it. This picture was taken from a tutorial because the picture looked very nice. So I thought that I'll share it with you. Let's see whether we can solve in two lines this complicated reaction diffusion equation. So NIT is the integral from 0 to dHT. Well, I don't need to do an integral. I know how to calculate the area of a triangle, right? Area of a triangle is what? Base, which is square root of dT. Height, which is NH0. Whatever is the hydrogen concentration at the interface, divided by 2. All right? So that's what my NIT is. How many unknowns here? Two unknowns, NH and NIT. Two equations, I can solve it. And look at that. The NIT, after you solve those two equations, two little equations, is telling you that this will have a power exponent of 1 over 4. It's a fractional power exponent. Those two equations is telling you this. And this was first discovered, not in this form, but from a numerical simulation by Jepson in 1977. Now, that this equation gives rise to a power law has deep implications for pattern formation, and I'll have 3-4 slides as an appendix to tell you about that. 1/4. But that's not what you saw in the experiment. What did you see in experiment? 1/6, right? So maybe there's something else going on. Right? So let's see what else could be going on. One thing people often say that hydrogen is not stable. Hydrogen cannot diffuse very far because anytime it sees a dangling bond, it gets distracted and get trapped locally. So therefore, the only way something can diffuse is to form a dimer. H finds a new H and H2 reacts with nobody. Then it can diffuse. So therefore, if some of the hydrogen could dimerize, then probably the process could continue. Let's see what that model would say. So do you see this? That now I have the two blue balls, which is two hydrogen, are making these red balls, which are this H2. So every two electron, and so therefore we are trying to see how this diffusion might change the exponent. Let's see that. Same equations, reaction has not changed. Now, what we have is now we have the hydrogen H2 after dimerization. I'm looking at how far they can diffuse, square root of dH2 now, T. And then I have the concentration NH2O, close to the interface, whatever value I have. Now, of course, these are living as hydrogen and making H2. So I must have a detailed balance between H and H2. Do you see this law of mass action? That if you have two hydrogen reacting with each other, giving to H2, then it will be NH square. And divided by NH2 will be approximately a constant. Now you can check it out. Just pause this slide when you listen to it at home. And then you can just take a pencil. You can figure it out. And remarkably, you solve this little three equations. You just insert NH2 in that first equation and solve for NH2 and NIT. The NIT will now give rise to 1/6.
Just assuming diffusion right now, right?
But the reaction is very important. So the question is, it's not just diffusion. Back reaction, which is the top equation on the top. See, that is very important because it... No drift. We are not thinking about any drift. In the homework, however, you will think about drift. And you will see that each exponent is like a marker. It will tell you the physics. And it does not depend on... Look at this. Doesn't depend on voltage, doesn't depend on temperature. All this voltage and temperature, as in Kf and Kr, number of defects you have, depends on nothing. This is a universal exponent. And it will go on forever till all the bonds are broken. That's why it stays there for 10 orders of magnitude in time. So I hope and on the homework, you'll do a few more. You'll get a little bit more comfortable about how to do this. When you do drift, instead of doing the triangle, you'll just do the rectangle. So you'll get the length of the rectangle, height of the rectangle, and you just solve these two equations. So now let me tell you a little bit about anomalous exponent. Remember that it is not always equal to 1/6. So let me see whether I can explain that. One thing that I made an assumption about is that the diffusion coefficient has a single barrier. Remember that it has one barrier, everybody has the same barrier. That is only true for crystals. Generally, for amorphous material, they have different rings, 3, 4, 6, and all around. So they don't are not exactly the same. And you can show that the diffusion coefficient in that case is not a constant independent of time. Because if it gets trapped in a big hole, it finds very difficult to get out. So therefore, diffusion coefficient actually slows down over time. Now, there's a very good paper. I'll not go through the detail. I just want to show you the consequence. You can look at the Physical Review B paper. On the bottom middle panel, I have a set of states with different depths because the ring statistics is different. And the red hydrogen, circle hydrogen, is moving around. But this is going through a dispersive diffusion. That's what it's called when you go through depths of different heights. The barrier heights being of different sizes. And then what you have to do, instead of put that value of dh into the top expression, and you will see, you will pick up n1 minus p. The p is a certain value. Depends on the dispersion, how distributed the defects are. And therefore, what's going to happen, the hydrogen is going to diffuse a little less because it has various big potholes where it gets trapped. And so therefore, this is just to represent that hydrogen diffusion process. And therefore, what you'll have that with dispersion diffusion on the second column, in the ideal case, you have 0.15. In the hydrogen, you have 1 over 6. If it's a proton, H2 plus, you'll do in the homework, it'll be 1/3. But with dispersion diffusion, it is a little bit less. Generally, a little bit less. And experimentally, it's often seen that way. All right. Now, the second feature, in two slides now, you'll understand that why in TNO, thermal nitrated oxide, the exponent was quite a bit lower, right? 0.12. Why was it? Now, the reason was, remember, it is close to the silicon dioxide interface, I have more defects. So, how do I understand that? Relatively easy, as I'm going to show you. I think it got tripped. Okay. You remember that dissociation is not the only thing, right? That is NBTI. I explained how the reaction diffusion model tells you T to the power 1/6 and all. But do you also remember that there are hole trapping in the pre-existing defects? And in the hole trapping in the pre-existing defects, do you remember? That's the blue curve. Charges very fast and then can either saturate or increase logarithmically as a function of time. The red one is the NBTI. In a linear plot, it looks like it's saturating. In a log-log plot, it will look like a straight line. You have to sum them. If you want to know the total threshold voltage shift, you have to sum them. And when you sum them, you will have two pieces. One piece has to do with NBTI, that T to the power 1/6, N is approximately 1/6. The other piece has to do, the red line, has to do with trapping. It will quickly trap, change the threshold voltage and saturate, or change as log. And when you put them together, then you can immediately see the slope will be a little bit less. So in that case, the slope is a little bit less. Now, it means that TNO has less exponent in the beginning, but if you were to wait for a very long period of time, it will return to T to the power 1/6. because the effect of the trapping will gradually go away. And if you had less pre-existing defect, the value will be small, the trapping value will be small. You will see that e to the power 1/6 regime early on. So let me explain two slides what the degradation-free transistor is all about. Because if NBTI was this horrible, life would be very bad. Turns out that sometimes God help you out a little bit. How did they help you? How does he help me out? So this is the drain current. A is some constant. It has the oxide capacitance and all those things, pre-factor all those things in. Mu and Vg minus Vt. You know that. I said that mu is constant. Is that true? And most people would say, that's fine. But that's not really true. And we'll see that. So if you take a log and take a differential, you can immediately say, because this is a product of mu and the Vg minus Vt, you can immediately say the drain current will depend on change in the mu divided by original mu minus change in Vt minus Vg minus Vt, original Vt. If the delta mu was zero, then life is good. Then Id will be directly proportional to Vt. But somehow, if delta mu became positive, that transistor got degraded, your mu got better. If somehow that happened, unlikely, but if somehow that happened, then of course, although I have a deep delta Vt, all the bonds are breaking away, my improvement in mobility will make the electrons go faster and make the overall transistor not degraded. So this delta Vt is what I have. In classical silicon transistors, generally you have a big degradation, but somehow if you could make delta mu positive, then the transistors will appear, although it's degraded, it will appear as if nothing has happened to the transistor. Right? You understand this problem. How can delta mu be positive? It turns out for silicon, it is always so. You have seen this many times, but you probably have never appreciated that meaning of that curve. So let's say you have a normal silicon transistor. You have applied a gate. You have a certain amount of charge, these empty circles on the top, certain amount of charge. And then you have the green circles. Those are inversion charges. Whatever is the gate charge must be equal to the number of inversion charges. And you know this mobility versus effective field curve, right? Look at this very strange thing that in the beginning, in the Coulomb interaction, that is where it goes up. And then because of surface roughness, it generally goes down. You have seen this before. Now let's see what happens after stress. After stress, what will happen that those blue lines are broken bonds, broken silicon hydrogen bonds. Same number of white circles on the top, on the gate, because your Vg is constant. Now, if Vg is constant and you have two blue ones broken, that means you will have fewer green inversion charge because part of them has been eaten by this interface charge. Therefore, what's going to happen after degradation, because the Coulomb scattering, the whole curve will be moved down, and that's the red dashed curve. If your effective field were the same, then of course, if the effective field were the same, then of course, there'll be a net degradation in mu because the blue point will go down to the red point, right? It will be bad in that case. But you see, that's not how you operate transistors. The way you operate transistors is actually you keep the Vg fixed. If your Vg is fixed, your Vt goes up, then your effective field actually goes down, right? Because the interface charges are screening it, so the inversion charges don't see as big a field. Therefore, you should not be staying at the same effective field. What you should be doing is going back in the effective field. And in silicon, it turns out such that after you adjust for it, the blue original point and the red final point is approximately in the same level. Therefore, you are lucky in silicon, or maybe unlucky in that case, mu does not change for this case. But think about what will happen if you had strange transistors where the curve was steeper. If the curve is steeper, for example, here I have shown three universal curves, mu versus effective field, red is silicon, let's say. Blue is some little bit more strained, green is even more strained, let's say. Somehow you have made the curve steeper. Doesn't matter how you did. Now do you see what's going to happen? For the same shift in the mu effective electric field, what's going to happen for the red curve if it exactly compensated? Now, for the blue curve, in fact, the value of mu will be bigger than what it was there before it started the degradation. And the same will be the case for green. And so your mu effective, if you do these experiments, what you'll see that for silicon, the red, indeed, the mobility is either flat or little bit getting worse. If you strain it a little bit, the mobility is almost flat. Strain it further, the mobility is actually positive. Things are getting defective. Still, the electrons now at a reduced field can fly faster. And therefore, speed is increasing. And once you do that, you can show that the change in the current, drain current, going from the strained one, which is very bad, to the middle panel in the blue, which is a little better, by the time in a strained transistor, the degradation can completely disappear because the mobility has gotten better. And this is how most of the transistors these days are. You put silicon germanium on source and drain to strain the transistor. It not only makes the mobility better, but in fact, it makes NBTI better. All right, so let me conclude with this. So I tried to explain to you the origin of power law, right? And by reaction diffusion equation. And I said that this is a universal feature on many natural systems. I'll have, after you're gone perhaps, I will have a slide section. I'll put it in, take a look later on. Now, you can test out, you look at the exponent as a fingerprint of what is happening in the system. Because hydrogen will have one exponent, 1/4, H2 have another exponent. So this gives you a sort of a microscope to sort of theory microscope to say what's going on inside the system. Now, the important point many people forget that VT shift is important, but for transistor technologies evolving, right? In the first lecture I told you. And strain transistors and other things have additional features that make ID shift less sensitive than the original VT shift. And so a degradation-free transistor might be possible. Okay, so this sort of concludes this.